This episode of Cherry Jam is dedicated to the memory of Ruby Cole, a young Gloucester supporter who sadly passed away last week. There is a GoFundMe page that we will be linking to this episode and to on our tweets, and that is Walking for Ruby. All our best wishes go to Joe and Neville, and we're really sorry to hear of their terrible loss.
I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Hello, and welcome to episode 27, series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Jim Harley, and Lawrence Landry. After miracle upon miracles, Gloucester not only winning their first title in 9 years, a week later, beating Leicester at Welford Road for the first time since 2007. We'll be chatting through that, the Women's Six Nations first round, issues around the TMO that were raised during the Harlequins Saracens game, and also the fact that we know promotion and relegation once again. But we'll start with Gloucester's brilliant win over Leicester at Welford Road on Friday night. Lars, I'll start with you. Just your thoughts really on the performance and the result as a whole.
Yeah, good to get the win. Doesn't happen very often. Not seen us win there. And I'd imagine there's a few Gloucester supporters who've never seen as long it is. Some of the younger ones. Some of it. They certainly seem to have turned a corner with how they're playing. They're playing a lot better. But into the kick tennis in the second half that we allowed in when they were there for the taking. Because in the first half, we seemed to play a very good game. We attacked well. We looked dangerous when we attacked, and we kicked the ball when it was the right time to kick the ball, and only kicked it when it was necessary. Whereas it seemed in the second half as we resorted somewhat how we have been playing in the first half of the season, or before, where we were playing this boring kick the ball at all costs game of rugby, although the statistics say we kick it the least. We just kick it poorly, obviously, if that's a... And that allowed Leicester to come back into the game when I felt they were there for the taking. But just managed to realise that we had to play rugby, doing that again once they took the lead with 5-6 minutes to go. And it very positive result, which I'm obviously very pleased with. I still think, as Snowy, who's not on here, one defeat doesn't make us a bad team and one win doesn't make us a great team. It is certainly pleasing to see that we are going in the right direction. Hold my judgment as to whether we have the right coaching staff in place until the next season, because it's obviously not going anywhere now. And if we show clear progression, after having their terrible season, then I will happily pie and say I got it wrong. But until that time, I shall reserve judgment on that stage of it. As a team, we certainly look to be going in the right direction at the moment, which is very, very good.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of really important points there, and I'll come to Jim about specifically around the style of rugby. First half, you're right to say there, Loz, it wasn't as if we were playing expansive rugby throughout it. We were we were kicking from our own 22. We were box kicking just as Leicester did. But when we had the opportunity to attack through multiple phases, we did. And I think also we saw in Zach Mercer everything you'd want to see from a player, Jim, that has come into the side with this huge reputation for an exciting brand of rugby, and you saw exactly what you'd want to see from that type of player on Friday night.
Yeah, he's absolute class. He's acting as kind of first receiver, second receiver. He's distributing the ball. He's got a great pass, and he's playing playing the game of a player that's 20 kilos heavier than him and a player that's, you know, significantly quicker than him. He's fantastic in his dexterity, what he can do to the game. He's able to play kind of a multitude of different styles, and kind of as you said, Ed, he as the game progressed, we were quite similar to the previous week, really. That sort of cup final, don't want to make the first mistake. We started off relatively defensive, not wanting to make any mistakes. But then when the opportunities arose, and I think that's what's changed in the last few weeks, is when there is an opportunity to counterattack, you know, off the back of a turnover, off the back of a knock-on, on the back of a good line break, for example, and just getting the other side of the defence, the team go from maybe a slightly defensive and conservative approach, they do quickly change to a let's have a look and see what's on. And now I think players are a little bit more confident that if they think it's on and they have a go and it ends up not being good and maybe they get isolated and it's a penalty turnover or something for holding, they're not going to get their arse chewed at the end of the game in a debrief. They're going to go, well, yes, actually, it's not your fault. It's the other guy's fault for not being up your arse and supporting you. And you know, watching the rugby today, I kept sort of saying, it's not just about dealing with those opportunities. It's about seeing the opportunities that someone else is going to get. It's seeing that your centre has a gap to run through and expecting them to run through the gap and then busting a gut. Whether you're the winger, the fullback, the back row, to get on their shoulder, to then give them an option to keep that momentum going, and I think now we've got players that are working with Zach, going back to, you know, the Mercer effect, if you like, we are now not expecting him to create miracles and do stuff, but we are. A little bit like when you had, you know, other previous magicians like Simpson Daniel, players are starting to play better around him because they are starting to read what he might do. And I think that's so, so key because, you know, there's no point making a fantastic break and creating a one-on-one with a fullback and getting turned over. What you want to do is you want to create a fantastic break and create a one-on-two because someone's with you. So, he's now doing what he was doing at the beginning of the season, but other players are supporting him better, I think, and it makes him look even better.
Yeah, being on the same sort of bandwidth is huge for a player like Zach Mercer. And we kind of saw that last week. He was struggling because obviously Leicester were targeting him in the final, and there wasn't a huge amount of support around him. So he was making those punching runs, taking players with him, but they weren't there. There wasn't necessarily someone for the offload. Whereas this week, there was a little bit more risk being taken, probably because, again, it wasn't a final. So therefore, you may be a slightly more, you're not as risk averse in these situations.
And especially Gloucester's position. You know, our position at the moment is, it doesn't, you know, we lose a game, we win a game. We're not realistically going to get into the top four. We are having to throw the kitchen sink at it
we're not getting in top four. We are not getting in the top four. We might be able to get top eight, but that's about
And that's the thing. So we can take risks because, you know, you kind of have to. And actually, if you take risks and they start coming off, then all of a sudden the team dynamic changes, and it doesn't become a risk anymore because you're so used to playing that brand of rugby, and it just a little bit more sort of standard play rather than, I think that's the trouble. Sometimes when you go away from your game plan and you start doing something because it's on, that's when it all goes to pop because only two of the 15 players are actually having a go at it.
Yeah.
Whereas
I mean,
now we've got more.
Exactly. I mean, that I think is probably the frustration from last season. If we're being honest about it, the La Rochelle game was almost a perfect game where we tried stuff that we would never have tried at any other point because we had nothing to lose. And we were 2 minutes away from pulling off the greatest shock in European Cup history. But the problem with that was, though, the fans then are expecting us to do that every week. And we just weren't there from a player point of view or tactical point of view. But fundamentally, the coaches weren't even on board with it. Now, I still think, and Loz, you alluded to earlier about we should never get too downhearted about a single loss, or we should never get too excited about a single victory. There were certain things that were said after the game during the game by George Skivington around the fact that we were forcing it too much, or I didn't think we were. I thought we were trying to make the right decisions. We were looking to make the right decisions.
We weren't. He's very risk averse and approach, which I can kind of understand. It's too negative for me. One thing that does frustrate me, off on a tangent, on just a point that you guys have made, we only seem to be able to do one at the moment. So we now are playing a bit more phase rugby, because if we didn't score our first phase previously, we weren't going to score at all. Now we seem to have got phase play going. But what the hell's happened to and our role in more defence? We just can't seem to be able to complete performance together at the moment, because we've just gone away. More. There was nothing wrong with the rolling ball. The problem was we did it all the time and had no plan B. Mm. What I'd like to see is a bit more of that rolling ball, because it will suck players in and create space for the backs going out wide. And we just don't seem to be doing it. It's either one thing or the other, and that's what's frustrating me at the moment a little bit on it.
Well, we changed it, didn't we? We changed it a little bit. We went to a shift drive, and then we went to a don't bother setting it up, just drive incredibly fast, incredibly hard, and just hope for the best that the ball comes to the back. And that gave us a little bit. And then we've kind of changed it again to let's not maul at all. And then we changed it again to let's just get turned over in the maul repeatedly.
We need to mix it up.
But I think at the same time, We should have a maul that is capable of holding onto the ball more often than not.
Yeah, I just on the defensive side of things, and I've not studied it in probably close enough from last week. Sorry, from this Friday, but it's rare. It is rare in a game where you see a maul that dominant. And I mean this in the greatest respect to the Tigers, because they were superb at the maul on Friday. But it's rare that you see that where there's something not illegal going on.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There's often a few things going on in the setup of the maul that means that the defending team are struggling to do something about
actually,
it.
In the Sale game today, the Sale Bath game, you know, they were pinged for a bit of like truck and trailer technique.
Yeah, the crossing. So
it's kind of the ball was offloaded out the back to a player that hadn't bound the players in front and then went through to a different pod. And I'm like, okay, that's incredibly technical, but yes, that is, you know, technically that is kind of an offside and crossing and penalty.
Mm.
And then I kind of looked at the next three or four line outs, and I'm going, well, he's in front, or he's doing this, or he's doing that, and they're all illegal too. So I did think Sale were incredibly lucky, incredibly unlucky with the refereeing decisions today. They just didn't seem to get it. But I guess when it comes to line out, and that's where when you do your, when you do all your kind of, you do all your pre-match and you look at all the video footage of previous games for your opposition, you also need to do the same for the referee. And you're going to see, what is this referee looking at specifically in this area, this area, this area? Because that analysis is going to give you, you know, actually, we can get away with this, but we're not going to get away with that. So we're not even going to get anywhere near that particular area where it might be a lifter that ends up being in front of the second row when they come to ground, and they'll be given that as an offside, or like we saw today in the Sale game, or, you know, maybe the thrower being a little bit off the line and being inside the field of play, whatever it might be. Certain referees do look for certain things. And I know there's obviously world rugby kind of, this is what we're looking at today. And in the case of Sarah Beckett, it's yesterday they decided they were going to start looking at the croc roll. So you've got to totally kind of decide what your game plan is going to be based on current protocols, what that referee might do, what the opposition might do. But God, why, like, yeah, just we should be a bit stronger, I feel in that mall, and we should be a bit better in mall defense as well. And I mean that from a captaincy point of view as well, that if we think something untoward is going on, then our captain should be able to speak about it in the first 10 minutes of the game, and then it doesn't happen again. And I don't want to make a massive thing about it, it's not a big thing, but, you know, like Leicester, I mean, so I was at Skittles. I watched it. I watched the first half on my phone, and I didn't really see the second half because, it wasn't my phone. It was someone else's phone, and my phone had 2% battery. And so I couldn't see the second half, and I kind of went into the not Skittle Alley to see the replay of Varney's try in the final minute, which was very nice.
Mm.
But I did get reports that my youngest was watching it at home, screaming at the telly, shouting, "They're all offside every bloody time they're offside." I'm like, yes, yes, good lad.
He's learning.
He's learned from the best.
Yeah.
But it is, it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, every team, a professional team, will get away with whatever they can get away with.
Hmm.
And that's where I think, you know, your captaincy and your respect for the referee is fantastic. Mahler doing his 5-4-3-2-1 countdown. Christoph didn't
it. That worked so well for them, didn't it? We'll come on to that in a bit.
We'll talk about it later, but it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Let's sort of stick with the positives, though. I thought that the two real big positives for me from Friday night, particularly when you think that, I mean, Leicester were given a huge, huge advantage in the bookies. You know, there was absolutely no expectation that Gloucester were going to get anything at all from Friday night. And I think we probably, if we're being honest, we were sort of hopeful, but not really realistic that we were going to get anything. A bonus point would be nice type thing. And what I felt good was the fact that Loz has always made this point that when the opportunities for points came, we took them. I think there was one where we probably should have gone for the post and we went for the line out, cocked it up, but then subsequently I think got another penalty from it. But we generally did go for the points, took the points when we were offer, which is always good to see. And the other thing, I mean, let's be honest, the big difference was on that horrible run of 9 defeats, 10 defeats, etc. Once we went behind with 4 minutes to go, 5 minutes to go, it was more likely that, you know, in that run, it was more likely that Leicester would score again than Gloucester coming back. And having that mental fortitude, having the belief that you can go through your systems and go through your phases and go through your plays, it does help when you get to superb offloads. I mean, first of all, Santi, you know, ball comes flying out the back of the tackle. It's all a bit, oh, crap, what have I got to go? He spots a gap. He runs through it. Seb Blake is on his shoulder. And then Seb Blake has the wherewithal to have a look inside. Varney's on his inside. And that really was an absolutely belting try and a great finish from Varney. And
you gas pipe to finish off because there
proper
was...
Gas. Yeah, yeah, proper he was step, gone, proper step, he? Proper gas.
Yeah. Yeah, really good.
But also, he worked hard to be on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Because there was, like you say, there was a lot of traffic, a lot going on.
Mm.
And I'm sure if I was to look at it again, there'd be other players being on other players' shoulders or being other options just in case a pass went somewhere else. I think that's the key, isn't it? It's working hard off the ball just so that if you are on the ball, you're in the right place at the right time.
Well, Harris, I mean, fair play to Harris. Harris was on the inside of Varney. So if Varney decided to step the inside, Harris was there to go into the post.
Yeah.
So again, not relying on Varney to make that run all the way through. But yeah, but typical Gloucester fans, as we all are, minutes ago, we've just taken the lead. We're all expecting it to cock up, though. Let's be honest. Every single one of us was thinking, well, we're definitely going to go off our feet here. The ref's going to ping us, and it's going to be another glorious defeat snatched from the jaws of victory in Loz's terms. And you're like, and it was genuinely refreshing to see us actually close it out. So
yeah, we didn't just really arrive.
Just there was a couple really of times at when I thought, oh god, he's going to ping us here, and we got away with it. Yeah. But
yeah. Definite voluntary tackle.
Yes.
But the supporting players didn't go off their feet, thankfully.
No. I mean, just as an aside, Loz, you mentioned right at the beginning about the fact that we, and I think, you know, I think fairly and rightly, we called out George Givington on that during that run and saying it wasn't good enough. And it wasn't.
You can't lose nine games on the trot and Nippy class is good enough.
And
the way we were playing as well, because we didn't look like we were going to win those games. They might have got close in those games that we lost. The only one we could argue potentially was the Exeter, and that was it.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, this is why I'm not to a people go quite rightly to say, you know, they can quite happily call us out and say, oh, you know, the Skivington out brigade. Well, we're still ninth out of 10th. We're not going to get in top four. You know, it's going to be a hell of a stretch to get in the top eight. So the only realistic way of getting into the Champions Cup next year is by winning the Challenge Cup, which again is going to be one hell of an effort. And that's why I'm saying it's still not good enough. I mean, it's great these victories are coming, and it's great to see that the style of rugby is changing. And as Loz said, though, as soon as we went back to the staid kicking for kicking's sake, box kick tennis crap, Leicester came back into it. As soon as you drop off that attacking intensity and intent, we don't look as good a side. If we play with attacking intensity and an attacking intent, and it doesn't have to be Barbar style through the hands every single time. It can be kicking to the corner, you know, as in kicking behind them, pushing them back into their 22. That's absolutely fine. It's a legitimate tactic. What we don't want to see, and I think Leicester fans are up in arms about the style of rugby they're playing, quite rightly as well, because Leicester were very poor outside of their rolling maul, is just mindless kick tennis.
I got frustrated in our WhatsApp group, didn't I? And I was going on about it. And Russ said, well, to be fair, Leicester are doing the same and kicking the ball back. This was the whole point. This is what makes it even worse. They were there for the taking. And this is going to end up costing us, isn't it? And they got right back into it because we just do not do this kick tennis very well. We went from, in the first half, we box it and chase it down well and people, but with the way we played with our pops, which enabled us to have a couple of 50-22s as well, which obviously gave us an attacking platform. But we had to just a minus box kicking straight down and not creating any space to be able to maneuver their pitch, and that was what was frustrating me. I didn't want Barbar, I don't ever want us to play Barbar. We won't win very many matches because we'll come up against teams with organizations that are way too good for what we're capable of attacking. But it will, that first look at it, I urge anyone to watch that first half again. That's what we play every week for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
There was, it was all there. Add in some rolling maul control as well. And you'd have to, we want Gloucester to do it week in, week out. They went wide when it was on. Kick the ball well. They kick the ball into space. Sometimes they kick, because Leicester were just only had two at the a lot of the time. We kick the ball straight down the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, that enabled us to then chase through the middle with two, three players so that they couldn't get stepped and put pressure on their kicks, which gained us an all pressure. And that's just by heads up and looking what's in front of us.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely right. I mean, the one thing I would say as well, just on the start of play again, we were very unlucky, I thought, at the end of the first half. I think Leicester got a really fortunate bounce. It was attempted charge down. I want to say it might have been on Kata. It went straight, or Kata picked the ball up from the attempted charge down.
Kata collected it.
But it was just a sheer fluke. It bounced into his arms. And actually, outside of that, they hadn't created anything, Leicester. I think they had one slight half chance where the winger went through.
Real opportunity. That ball could have gone anywhere else. If it had gone probably 80% of places, we'd have been camped on their 5-meter line off the back of it.
Yeah, absolutely. If it goes into the arms of a Gloucester player, Leicester had no one back. We were in. As Loz says, if we can play like we did in the first half, I would say probably 90% of the first half, that's the style of rugby we want to see. That sort of balanced level of, balanced between a genuine attacking intent, I should say, but equally sensible safety first stuff in your own 22. Clearing the ball, getting the ball off the pitch, resetting, putting pressure on their line out. It's the basics, really. It's where I don't really understand why teams and Gloucester particularly don't just stick to the basics and then work off that. As soon as you move away and you start trying to do silly, fancy things, that's when it all...
Well, they say that there's an old adage, isn't there? Rugby is a simple game complicated by idiots.
Yeah, quite. And there's a lot of idiots. mainly on this podcast, I should say. Genuinely, there's some really positive things that are coming out of this. Again, like, just want to put a few little notes aside. Ruin stepping in to be captain.
I was going to say that we're not reliant on one person's captain there as well, which helps.
No, we've got leaders play
every minute of every game.
Yeah, we've got leaders across the pitch. I think Ludd's actually probably deserved a bit of a break and a bit of having been injured. I'm not saying he wants to be out and injured, but that's probably going to be good for him, having a rest for a week or two. Mercer is obviously a natural captain. Whether he is the captain on the pitch, it doesn't really make a difference. He will be that team's leader going forward. Huge credit to Kirill again. 80 minutes after another 80 minutes. Once again, I thought Jamal was very unlucky. She probably deserved a few penalties. He had Cole absolutely on toast in his first scrum. We know Cole is getting to the end of his days as a professional player, but Jamal basically is the best loose head in the Premiership at the moment. It's ridiculous. He should be in the England team. I'm putting it out there. And I thought the other key contributions, Santi at 10, I think we'll all agree, not our favoured position for Santi, but did really well. And having Seb Atkinson and Chris Harris able to interchange now, that you don't have a drop-off.
There was absolutely no difference at all when he went off for his HIA and then bang. There was no, well, clearly, because Charis went under the post. But
well, it's definition it's kind of a cameo, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's that perfect.
Cheers, boys. I've just done right now. Off I go. You carry it on.
Yeah, don't suck it up, boys.
Perfect. teams will look to maybe challenge that area when there's been a non-tactical substitution, and they will see, they weren't planning for this. That'll probably be a little chink in their armour for, a minute or two until they get themselves, rearranged. It's not the case. It's not the case. We need players that are similar enough that they can play the same game plan. So when you swap one for the other like that, they can do a job. And absolutely, it worked.
Yeah. Sorry, go on, Loz.
No, you say.
I was going to say the other thing to say, Josh Hathaway. Get the right wording out. Coming in and doing really well and very unlucky actually. I think he probably, albeit for a very good sort of last ditch tackle, would have been under the post himself as well. So he's someone I think we definitely have to watch. He looks really, really accomplished. Pace to burn. Clearly got the skills and the trust as well of the coaches. which is important. It's his age, and again,
it'll be interesting to see how he goes. Whether he fills out like Ollie Thorley and becomes a bit more, bit more of a robust winger, or whether he concentrates on his speed and his step. Because
focus on his speed. He has got some proper gas there. We don't need a hit it up. We got one of them in Thorley. We want him to focus on his keeping his gas. One thing I just going to just go off on the tangent slightly, and I know it's for another day, which we can talk about. But the substitutions. You mentioned Creel that went 80. Seb Atkinson went the full 80 as well. The continuity that was there from the players being on the pitch. Obviously, Creel is unbelievably fit person to be, because this is not the first time he's done 80 minutes.
There's levels of machinery there which I'm not sure. Yeah, human, but there we are.
Yeah, but we need. Rugby needs to change the rules on substitutions and reduce them, because it to be a far better spectacle again if you end up with fewer substitutions, more tired players. The emphasis would go on to fitness. You can't be fit to play 80 minutes and carry the amount of muscle these players have to carry. For game overall, if we end up with uncontested scrums, you're always, no matter what professional level, some bastard will try and take advantage of whatever's there by finding a loophole to do so. Okay. The moment we ended up with a full front row to avoid uncontested scrums, players were getting substituted after 55, 60 minutes in a new front row. And it's okay, we've got contested scrums. Well, contested scrums really put in these days and allegedly hooked. You know, the days of a proper contested scrum are long gone. So if we end up with, I don't run contested scrums right from the start, but if at some stage during a game we end up with an uncontested scrum, so be it, because we've got solutions. That has got to be a better thing for the game for me.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, absolutely. Just as a final thing on the game, obviously probably the most important part of it, we brought the Ed Slater Cup home. We brought the Slater Cup home for the first time. After four attempts, we now won two bits of silverware in a
two
week.
Two cups in 2 weeks. More to go.
Yeah. And you could tell the joy.
Bristol's bang out of form, isn't it?
Yes. Rifles Cup as well to come as four.
Three cups in 3 weeks.
But no, genuinely though, and absolutely sincerely, the joy you could see across the squad at being able to bring home the silverware for the Slater Cup. You know, look, it's in the grand scheme of things, it's not the most important trophy, but obviously it is the most important trophy for the lads who've played with Ed and know him. So it meant a lot, clearly, to the team, and it you saw the images of Ed Slater as well. It clearly meant a lot to him as well. So really lovely that we can actually have the Ed Slater Cup, or we could be defending the Ed Slater Cup next season at Kingstone. Right, we're going to pause. We're going to come back. We're going to rattle through the other topics we're going to talk about this week. We're going to start off though with chats about TMOs and what can they hear and what they can't hear.
Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
So, you may or may not have seen over the weekend that there's been a bit of lively debate around the TMO again. Specifically, that what was apparently said by Austin Healey meant that the TMO at the Harlequins Saracens game was unwilling to look at an incident involving one of the Quins players coming in, sliding in with the knees. And it's led to a number of accusations and a number of things out there about, again, the role of the TMO, how they can view some of this stuff, where this stuff is coming from in terms of what they can review and what they can't review. I just wanted to sort of open up to you guys and see, do you think is there a really simple solution? I mean, I think there is a really simple solution.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. And would you like to go through that simple solution, Loz?
Your simple solution is the TMO doesn't get to listen to the TV commentary, because then there is no issue when a game isn't being televised. Then, because the TMOs are at every game, however, not every game is being televised. I know, appreciate that from next season that is
it will be, yeah,
it will be, but that's not the point. That's and that removes the problem.
I take it from a different perspective, Lawrence, and I just think that Austin Healey should be the TMO and then
with all his issues. God, Lord help us.
Yeah, no, but in all seriousness, Austin is very, very good. He sees a lot. He sees a lot off the ball. And as a commentator, I think that's because I follow the play and I miss a lot. I mean, I don't miss as many forward passes as has happened this weekend. I saw all those. But I think...
And he sees stuff that hasn't actually happened a lot of the time as well.
Yeah, sometimes it's quite hard, I think, for the TMO because they're trying to get editors to give them information and they're trying to get different angles and stuff. And I think we've certainly seen in European fixtures, it's very difficult sometimes to get some of that. But you know, it's happened before. It happened obviously against us in the past that TMOs have interjected and they've interjected where they don't have jurisdiction to do so.
Yeah.
And actually, I kind of, for me, when it's a clear forward pass in open play, I don't see an issue with the TMO talking just like the touch judges would to the referee and say, it's a forward pass. And if what we don't want is we don't want the game to slow down. And I think that sort of comment, a little bit, I've just sent him off the ball, or... That was a late hit or whatever. You know, when it's an act of foul play, the TMO is allowed to come in anyway. And actually, the act of foul play, there's huge stoppages. You know, minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute, where they're looking at stuff. But a lot of the interjection could be really, really short. It could be there was a little knock on there, you missed it, or it could be a forward pass, or you know, whatever. And I don't see an issue with that. I think actually the issue comes that the majority of officials, and I'm sort of ignoring the top kind of few referees in this, the majority don't like to be getting commentary in their ear from their team.
Yeah,
it would appear, and I'd love to be contradicted on this. I'd love to have a little bit of intel from, you know, some referees. But I think there are very, very few referees that have the mental capacity to cope with a dialogue in their ear all the time. And because obviously they're getting that from opposition captains, players, marlers, whoever. So I think if we can get to a position where referees are capable of absorbing that much information, which is incredibly hard, don't get me wrong, if they have the ability to be able to take on information from both their touch judges and a TMO simultaneously throughout a game. And all we want is the right decision at the end of the day. If we can have the correct decision 99.9% of the time, as opposed to 95% of the time, then surely that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, just on the specifics of this incident, I think the TMO's got into a bit of a tiz with him with the whole situation, because look, it's an off the ball scuffle. The TMO should be looking at that anyway, regardless of whether Austin Healey's calling on somebody coming on a knee slide. It's kicked off a bit. There's been a bit of push and shoving, handbags at best, but the TMO should be looking at that anyway. The solution, as Loz quite rightly says, is don't listen to they shouldn't have the audio of the ground of the coverage in their ears. That has to be consistent across every game. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and it might just be that for the top flight, you know, the rugby is inherently a different game in at professional level to amateur level. It's an inherently different game between the Premiership and the Championship. You get a, for each game, on the basis next season we're going to have cameras at every single game. It's going to be live on TNT every single game. You should have a team of TMOs or a TMO team. So there is a guy who is in charge of that team. You've got two or three people looking at all the footage. So anytime there is anything, you know, you can call up and say, okay, I think I've just seen a headshot. Give me two, you know, I can go and look at that headshot. Or I think I've just seen someone throw a punch or whatever. I can look at that. It means that that can all be going on in the background. And if there is a check, the TMO has the opportunity. He's the sole arbiter of all that. He says, do you know what? That hits the threshold. I need to let the match officials know. We're going to check that. And of course, that doesn't preclude the match officials on the day, like Wayne Barnes has done so brilliantly before, like Nigel Owens has done, like Luke Pearce does. If you stay, they'll see something out the corner of their eye and they'll go,
Can you
please check that? It, you know, I think that's fine. I don't think that was high. I think he was dropping, blah, 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 blah. And then they can check it in real time. All of that can still happen. And I don't see why that shouldn't be an option for the TMOs and the going forward.
It's really, really good as well for like the team that feels they've been wronged. When you've got a quality referee, just say, you know, don't worry, it's been marked. I've mentioned it. It's being looked at. You know, there's a couple of things where referees will just go, oh yeah, don't worry. Well, you know, if there's anything of it, then they'll let me know. And it's like, well, no. Can you give me a definitive? They are looking at that incident, and it happened today in the Bath game. That, you know, they're kind of, are you looking at the head on head? Yeah, we're looking at it. Well, are you really? Stop. And then the TMO interjects and goes, oh, actually, I have seen a clear head on head. You might want to have a look at this. And it's like, well, it shouldn't be like that. Play should have carried on and then been brought back. Because what we don't want is the start, stop. And because the majority of times, one would hope that it becomes a rugby incident. It's nothing to worry about. Mm. And the TMO has that. That autonomy to be able to say to the referee, I've had a look, I believe it's a rugby incident, don't worry about it, play on. And then the game doesn't stop. The game carries on, and then at the next stoppage, when they go, well, what about that head-on-head? And then you can go, well, my TMO looked at it, it was deemed a rugby incident, and it's not being looked at. And that's it. And I think if captains and players in general, if they feel like all their grievances are being kind of looked into, then actually there'll be a lot less issues generally, and they'll just crack on with actually playing rugby.
End of the day, just it's all about communication, isn't it? I mean, there is something we'll probably come back to it another day, but I watched a bit of rugby league, a bit of NRL yesterday, sort of around lunchtime, and I'd never really noticed it before, but obviously that you get a captain's challenge in rugby league, and I wonder whether that might be something that you could bring in. If there's a particular incident, I mean, it was actually quite a fairly nothing incident. I think it was a knock on that was being challenged. So nothing too huge, but it meant that they would have had a full another set of six, etc. But maybe something to look at, but we can come back to that another time. Just moving on from away from the TMO issues, Jim, before we go on to a quick review of the Women's Six Nations, and it will be brief. Once again, no promotion and relegation at the end of this season. The reason being is that only one side actually even bothered to go through the process, and that was Doncaster. And fair play to Doncaster.
As they have done previously.
Yeah, and fair play to Doncaster, because they do consistently go through it. They've got everything right off the field. The only thing they haven't got at the moment is a team that can challenge for the title. Now, I think that's only a matter of time, personally. I think if you're a player and you want to be in the Premiership, you're now looking at it and going, well, the only team.
Why would I play for a team that isn't Doncaster?
Yeah, why would I want to play? I mean, don't get me wrong. Yes, Ealing probably pay more, but at the end of the day, Ealing aren't prepared at all to challenge for the Premiership. And interestingly, as well, let's put this out there: for all the whinging and the moaning and the whining from Coventry, who I've got a lot of time for as a rugby club because they've got a consistently good fan base. They've got a really decent setup up at Butts Park. And actually, probably if they'd gone through the process, would have been able to get signed off. Didn't bother. So any time for the until these teams, Ealing, Coventry, Pirates, until that every single one of them is just actually putting themselves up for selection and being put up for that process, if you're not willing to do it, you've got no leg to stand on whinging and moaning about promotion and relegation.
They don't want promotion. They don't want promotion.
No, they don't want promotion.
Ealing don't want promotion because they know they can't afford it. And
no.
It would not be befitting them. They would be embarrassed in the Premiership.
Yes.
And almost certainly thrown straight back down. And if they weren't thrown straight back down, they would lose a huge amount of money with their year of playing.
And then, let's be honest, Ealing are the next, you know, in 4 or 5 years' time, Ealing will not be in the Championship because they won't be a rugby club anymore in that sense. That's my prediction. So they'll probably win the bloody Premiership in about 5 years' time. But that my prediction is Ealing, they don't want to be promotion. They don't want promotion at all. So Lars, just any thoughts from yourself? Obviously, Doncaster have put themselves forward. They were successful in that regard, but they're way off the pace at the moment. Do you share my frustration? Do you think it's fair enough that these teams aren't bothering? You know, what's your views on that?
I don't really care, to be honest with you.
Well, that's fine, though, because...
Look, there's no point. One of my biggest gripes about women's rugby at the moment, or women's sport in general, as I've said in the past,
this is about promotion relegation.
Is that it's sport? No, I'm just saying, is that okay. It's one, what is the amount of one-sided fixtures? That's
oh, I
there.
See. Okay.
And if the teams that are currently in the Championship, if they come up, will get ripped a new one every week. And there's the story of Exeter, but. They are the only one. Look at the other teams that have come up. Leeds have disappeared into the abyss, couldn't stay up and have disappeared into the abyss. Worcester have gone out of business. These teams aren't coming up and being successful. The only one that has been Exeter.
Who were massively
bankrolled, exactly. So yeah. they couldn't really fail, to be brutally honest with you. Congratulations to them for making it work, because it's not as simple as just chucking money at it, because otherwise these other teams in the past would have. But I think all that's going to happen at the moment is you are going to, you also had a few, because Bristol were down at that stage as well, so mm-hmm. Exeter and Bristol were two, there was two teams of who were relatively competitive to almost Premiership standard anyway in that league at that stage. You don't have that at the moment. I appreciate the league is a bit closer than perhaps Ealing would like, but it's the quality is not there at all. The opportunities to grow that league disappeared years ago, I'm afraid, and now it's you get the odd result and people will say, oh, look at the Premiership Cup, those out of four promotion relegation, and I do like the jeopardy of promotion and relegation, but only if whoever's coming up would actually add something to the league, because at the moment I can't see that happening. And if we go back to a 12 team division, so we don't have the, instead of just it, like it was before, two teams coming up from there, no, not for me, I'm afraid. The only time that potentially we could end up with some sort of promotion back to the Premiership between promotion and relegation potentially could be if Wasps make their way back. And that's even then, they've got to get a team. Just because they're Wasps, that doesn't mean to say that they're going to sign players that are going to make that team competitive.
Yeah.
So for me, I can't get too excited about it. I also had in the past that I always used to think that the minimum standards were hypocritical as well, because there were teams in the Premiership which didn't have stadia which met the criteria that if they'd gone down they wouldn't have come back anyway, but they would have been laid back in because of the fact they were in the Premiership before, so they have
the
some sort of exemption.
It's a load
of rot, honestly.
Just on that point about the standards, Because that's fundamentally the issue for Ealing and Pirates specifically. I think Coventry probably could and would succeed. You know, there's not a huge amount. If they have to do some work, it's not a huge amount of work they need doing. But the minimum standards, there has to be some minimum standard. And if you look at it, actually, the minimum standard now is it's achievable, with the exception probably Ealing would can't. I think there is no way in a million years that Ealing would be able to achieve the minimum standards at their ground at the moment. They'd have to totally redevelop it. They ain't going to do that. That's why it's a total farce situation with them. But Pirates, Cov, Doncaster obviously are there anyway. In that, they're already there. The minimum standards are achievable. It's, and as Jim said, the reason why these teams don't want to get promoted really is because it would bankrupt them. Because if you look at the supporters outside of Coventry, no other side in that league has got significant numbers of followers. You're going to have to generate that in an area. I just don't see how you're going to get these numbers to come to watch the rugby. Newcastle can't do it. Sale can't do it. North of Birmingham, there doesn't seem to be the appetite for rugby union. So if you're looking at those, that's a massive issue. That's a huge issue that we're gonna struggle with. And I think just one final thing, of course, is promotion and relegation is great if you, as you said, Loz, you've got a set of teams that are willing and able to compete at that level. We don't have that at the moment. If we're simply going to add teams into the league, that buggers up the league again, and we've had this really weird time where we've had a lot of time off. But I would say it's preferable to have a Six Nations where we can focus on the Six Nations and we're not having sides like, you know, Saracens, Leicester, Northampton, devoid of their best players and watching a second-rate Premiership team and a Premiership product. We should have the best players available at all times in the Premiership and in the Six Nations. That's just my opinion. But
I think that's a big plus for the teams that have left, terrible shame, but a 10-team league and the way they've been talking about it this weekend of a kind of like a mini pre-season and then going into this...
The running,
as they call it, I think it's a really good thing. Mm. I think it's a real positive. And the way that the clubs can potentially market it, I think is really good as well. So... yeah, I don't think going back to a 12-team league is a particularly good idea in the short term.
The only way it would work is if we got to a 14 or 16-team league and you can then substitute the cup competition for the fact you've got more league fixtures. We're way off that. So it's not going to be...
Well, unless we get the Welsh and the Scots.
I was going to say, unless you've got the Welsh involved. And you know, there's...
Sod off in your own leagues, and if you haven't got enough money, tough shit.
Well, that was kind of the point I was going to get to.
The whipping boys.
Yeah.
You can't even... We haven't got enough money for our own clubs. Why are we trying to bail out another union? Yeah,
I know. Right, just a final bit of this week, just to sort of finish off, and that's just to talk about the Women's Six Nations. It's unfortunately, from the first weekend of fixtures, it's very, very clear that it's going to be a two-horse race, and realistically, probably a one-horse race already. We'll just touch on a few things. Obviously, England with a nil Italy with a 40-odd, 48-0 was it, I think it finished. Despite going down to 14 women after about 7 minutes, it was about as one-sided as you can get, and England didn't play particularly well. Jim, any other comments other than just to say what you said to me off air around the roster players?
No, I think it was noticeable when all they made the substitutions sort of 60, 65 minutes, and four Gloucester players came on, and then all of a sudden we looked even better.
Yeah, surprised that really, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how the team go, because you've got quite a few players, like Roland and Jones, that are coming from like Loughborough and Leicester that aren't playing well. They are down the bottom of the league, but they are very, very good players. Mm. Scarrett as well, who's been off injured for a huge amount of time coming in. She put two, maybe three kicks out on the full, attacking kicks, not sort of defensive place kick. And I'm like, that's not good. They were quite, it was quite a fluke. I mean, it was fantastic. I think Zoe Elcroft played the whole 18 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's the first game she's played in goodness knows how long after her injury. So really, really good to see players, like Scarrett, like Elcroft, coming back from injury. But I think it will definitely take a couple of games for some of those players that are used to getting beat every week to play a bit more like, an England team or a Gloucester Hartbury team that just expect to win every week.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I only saw the England game. I was working and didn't get to catch the other matches on Saturday. Mm. But kind of, I get the feeling that there was a lot of naivety in that Welsh team. A lot of youngsters.
Yes.
Clearly, they had the opportunity to win. They didn't realise they had the opportunity to win and kick the ball out. So there'll be a lot of head scratching and a lot of chat and a lot of improvements. And I think the women's game has just been exploding, hasn't it, in the last few years? And I think the Six Nations could well see another massive step up in performances, in play. So I think first weekend, it's always going to be a bit of a nervous affair. It's always going to be a little bit clunky. The teams probably don't get the same amount of pre-tournament togetherness that maybe the men do with that amount of professionalism. So I think it will take a couple of weeks, but at the same time, I think it's going to be a really, really high standard, real high quality affair. I know I've heard some stuff about people saying, oh, why isn't the Rugby Championship or whatever it's called, the European Rugby Championship, the second tier Six Nations, why isn't that being played now? So it kind of follows on from the Six Nations. I'm like, well, there's a clear and obvious reason for that. And it's because the men's international window was when the Six Nations was on. Because that would be really handy, wouldn't it? If you could just have international rugby all year round. But I like the way that, the men's Six Nations finishes and then straight away the women's goes in. So people that have maybe been bought into it and kind of started watching and started enjoying it, they can go, oh, it's all on iPlayer or BBC Two or whatever, and they can start watching some of the women's rugby. And I really do hope that people are enjoying it as much as I am, because I think it's a real good spectacle.
It is, yeah. I think we've always said, though, the biggest downside of women's rugby at the moment is just it's not competitive enough across enough nations. And the only way that's going to improve is additional funding. So more funding for the women's game outside. England, France fund it. New Zealand fund it. Canada sort of fund it. That's about it.
Wales have started to fund
Wales
it.
Wales have started. Ireland has started it.
Ireland
Scotland
have maybe
has started.
Thrown a couple of pence at it. I think it will take a few years, won't it? It will take a couple of years. But for sure, the Welsh team, they have got... I'm trying to count now.
They've got a lot of Gloucester Hartbury
They girls. Must have 10. They must have 10 under-20s in their squad. They are a very young, very dynamic, very kind of exciting squad. And I think that conveyor belt, if you like, of talent is definitely feeding in at the bottom. And, if you're in your 30s as a women's rugby player, you are very much looking over your shoulder to these 18, 19 year olds that are coming out of the factories of Hartbury and Loughborough, and maybe
and
Cardiff.
Yeah, as I was saying, there's a lot of very young, talented female rugby players who, in the next couple of years, are going to really. I think women's rugby is just on that cusp, and we've got an English World Cup next year. Where you would absolutely see England really, that's their opportunity. This is their one opportunity to go and win a tournament at home. Massive exposure. And that can only be a good thing for the game. And I think it's probably similar, not quite the levels of the Lionesses, but we're not far off that level of awareness, certainly within the rugby community. I know that like people like you and me, Jim, we've been on board for a while. Loz is someone who I think you appreciate the England women's team as a really excellent side, but Loz has always been, and absolutely right on this, that there's just not enough depth.
Yeah,
And I think that totally fair. I think that.
I think with it being kind of a home World Cup as well, it's a lot cheaper for the WRU, the IRU, the SRU. It's a lot cheaper for them to send big squads with bigger teams, so you can have more medics, more physios, more of all those players, because you're not flying them halfway around the world. You're just putting them on a train or sticking them in a minibus or whatever. So I think we'll see a far, far better performance from the home nations.
Far more
And
professional, wasn't it? That's the big difference.
I think New Zealand will definitely be a real strong side. But I think the trouble with New Zealand, which kind of really scuppered them last World Cup right up until the end. They just don't get the level of competition. So if they're used to playing a really, really poor Australia or a
South
really, really
Africa,
poor South
yeah.
Africa, or a non-existent Argentina, they are just not being they're not being forced to play at any sort of standard at all. And so it takes something like a World Cup for them to actually get going, get up to speed, and then, unfortunately, they peak at final time. But I still think we'll smash them to bits.
Yeah, I think this one's. I'd be amazed if England don't come out winners. Just actually one final thing, and I just wanted to quickly touch on this, which was the thing from last week. We mentioned that what should happen after the end of the Six Nations is the team that finishes bottom of the Six Nations should play the team that finishes top of the European Championship. So
Yeah.
Wales play Georgia, and then fair play Georgia, credit where it's due, call the Welsh out, say. We won a game in Tbilisi in later in the year, and I think the Welsh are still getting back to them. I think they're trying to work out what excuse they've got to not play. But yeah, that's got to be the thing going forward, isn't it? We've got to have that. We've got to have that as an annual game. It doesn't mean anything about promotion or relegation, so all of that can be put to one side. It should be a challenge between the two teams, and then of course, after the 10th time that Georgia have done Wales, then you can have a serious conversation, and we can bin
Yeah.
Wales off. On that note, it's the West Country Derby next weekend, and I'm not going. I'm down in London because I booked something a year ago. So I can't go. So my daughter will be there. Jim, you'll be there.
Will. I
Yeah.
think my son will be there.
Oh well. And
Yeah,
yeah, so
I think
I'll
it's
have
going to
to
be a good game.
yes, I mean two sides have come off and two unexpected and good wins. We'll see our Gloucester if we can continue our good form. A win, funnily enough, a win does mean that top eight charges possibly on a defeat and it's gone. So it's a big game for Gloucester in that
I
regard if we
think
can get
it's a
top
big
eight.
game, but at the same time, Bristol do not play conservative rugby, and we will not be able to even remotely contemplate winning without being expansive. We will need to score tries. So I can see it being bonkers. I can see it being like a
Like the Bath
42.
Bristol game earlier in the
Yeah, I
year.
can see it
Yeah.
being like 40 something, 30 something. I can see it being a high scoring affair. So I think we kind of need to just go like all week in training, just go, let's all about skills. Like just, we're going to try and contain them. But what we're going to do is we're going to, every time we get an opportunity, got to take it.
Yeah. Loz, your thoughts just before we finish on this weekend. Do you follow Jim's thought there, process, try and go expansive, or do we try and be a bit more controlled and sort of force Bristol to do stupid stuff?
I think we just need to play like we did in the first half against Leicester. I think that's the answer. The trouble is with Bristol, if they click, they could beat anyone, literally anyone. If we go more pragmatic and play a kicking game, they've punished us in the past because their kick is superb. I think we just need to make sure the key to beating Bristol is first up. If you don't let them break your line, that's what when they get in behind you, ruthless. They're so dangerous. But it's those where expect the worst and enjoy the best.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's the good best way to beat me, man.
We are still, we're only just to improve. So it's very difficult to have too much confidence unless you are just blinded by the belief. If you are, you see, I wouldn't want to, I don't know how people live their life like that. I just wouldn't want to. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with supporting the team and thinking that you're going to win, but a bit. Listen, it's not a bad thing, and I just think that we're not capable of every single team yet. So I just don't know. This is the thing, I just don't know. It's one of those games where you'd actually turn around someone who wasn't interested in rugby, come and watch this game because it's going to be a cracker. It could, but then again, life because it could, has the potential of being. Bloody awful! If Bristol,
it's got the chance of selling a million season tickets or destroying any future for Gloucester.
Yeah, because if Bristol are dire, then this is not going to be a good. Because they're going to carry on playing how they were, and all they're going to do is knock the ball on and whatnot and kick the dead, and we end up with set piece after set piece. And if Gloucester don't. Get dominant, it could be a really bad game of rugby from the game.
Yes. I think for me, the chances of it being a really poor game are relatively slim. The reason being is now with the pitch that it is, even if it absolutely hammers it down, the conditions to a point don't matter anymore. And you've got two sides where you've got a lot of attacking talent. I think, again, very similar to what happened last weekend, the big difference is going to be up front. If Gloucester can get parity or get a bit of dominance up front, that front five, I think there will be enough there to win. Where Bristol did a number on Northampton was Northampton got basically pinged off the park in the set piece. So if Gloucester can just keep it tight in the front five, we'll be all right, I think. But I'm not going to be there, so I'll just have to suffer... and get the updates from you boys while I'm in a cocktail bar in London. So remortgaging. Yeah. Well, the remortgage is in about 3 years' time, so we're getting ahead of it, mate. Get it in now, and then I can pay off before we get the remortgage. Right, with that in mind, have a good week. We'll speak again next weekend, and all the best. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Cloudwater Tap Takeover, the Drunken Duck all week. Get involved.